from the classroom to the emergency room, OR and beyond. You're joining Trauma ICU Rounds with your host, Dr. Dennis Kim.
Welcome back to Trauma ICU Rounds. For those of you joining us for the first time, I'm your host, Dr. Dennis Kim. I'm an associate professor of clinical surgery at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA and a trauma surgeon slash intensivist at Harbor UCLA Medical Center in Torrance, California. I hope that everyone is staying safe and healthy during these trying times. This week, the stay-at-home order was extended through August here in Los Angeles County. And I wanted to start the episode today by sending out thanks and shout out to Dr. Adam Garibay from the Emergency Medicine Residency Program here at Harbor UCLA. Adam is a trained hairstylist, and after seeing a picture of two of my four kids' hairs just absolutely butchered by my wife Alexis several weeks back, Adam reached out and offered to take care of their hair and also take care of me. So thank you so much, Adam, for popping by. So today we're going to be discussing modes of ventilation in follow-up to episode 3, in which we laid the groundwork or fundamentals for understanding mechanical ventilation. And as you may recall, we discussed the respiratory equation of motion, which states that the combined pressure generated by the patient and ventilator, that is the negative pressure generated by the muscles of respiration or P muscle, and the positive pressure delivered by the vent or P vent, must be greater than both the resistive and elastance forces in the lungs and chest wall in order to produce motion or flow to deliver a volume of gas into the lungs. Further, we discussed the four phases of a breath and defined a mode of ventilation on the basis of three key factors or three T's, namely the type of breath, the targeted control variable, typically volume or pressure, and the timing of breath delivery. So we have four key objectives for today's discussion, and by the end of rounds, you should be able to, number one, explain the differences between the three types of breaths that patients may receive while ventilated. Number two, discuss the advantages and disadvantages of using volume versus pressure as the targeted control variable. And finally, understand the indications and differences between the three most common modes or breath delivery techniques, specifically continuous mandatory ventilation, CMV, synchronized intermittent mandatory ventilation, SIMV, and pressure support ventilation, or PSV. Regarding objective number one, the type of breath. So when it comes to the type of breath delivery, there are really three types of breath. Number one, we have mandatory breaths. Number two, spontaneous. And number three, assisted. Mandatory, aka controlled breaths, are breaths for which the ventilator controls the timing, tidal volume, or both. For example, if a patient is in the OR undergoing major abdominal surgery, these patients will be heavily sedated, analgesed, I know that's not a word, and paralyzed. Therefore, every breath the patient receives is by definition a mandatory breath. Controlled mandatory ventilation, or CMV, is an example of a ventilator mode in which all breaths are considered mandatory breaths. On the opposite end of the spectrum are spontaneous breaths, or breaths for which the patient controls both the timing and tidal volume. The delivered volume, pressure, or both are determined by the patient's demand and underlying characteristics of the respiratory system, namely resistance and compliance. And just as a reminder, resistance and compliance make up the load against which the ventilator, or in the case of spontaneous breaths, the respiratory muscles, must work to deliver air. As part of our assessment of readiness for extubation, for example, patients are typically placed on what's known as a spontaneous breathing trial, or SBT, which may be performed in a variety of ways. And one such way is called the T-piece trial, which involves disconnecting the patient from the ventilator while providing oxygen in a blow-by fashion via a T-shaped adapter that's connected to the end of the ET tube. And during such a trial, patients breathe spontaneously at their own rate and determine their own tidal volume without any assistance from the vent. So this is a spontaneous form of breathing. And as you can imagine, it's not the most popular means of assessing readiness for extubation. Assisted breaths are somewhere in between a mandatory and spontaneous breath insofar as they have characteristics of both types. For an assisted breath, all or part of the breath is generated by the ventilator. In other words, assisted breaths are breaths in which the ventilator offloads some of the work of breathing for the patient. How do you know if a breath is assisted? Well, if you look at the ventilator display and the pressure time scaler or waveform, if the airway pressure rises above the baseline during inspiration, the breath is assisted. Unlike a T-piece SBT, where patients are completely disconnected from the vent, during what's known as a pressure support SBT, a set peep and target pressure, usually at around 8 to 10 centimeters of water, are set by the clinician. The patient triggers the breath and the vent delivers the set pressure above the baseline pressure, in this case the peep, which is usually around 5 centimeters of water, to assist the patient's breathing effort. More on this in a bit. As we move on to our second objective, or the differences between volume and pressure targeted ventilation, I want to clarify a few things up front. You know, many people define the mode of ventilation based on whether the primary independent variable being manipulated is volume or pressure, whereas others have defined the mode based on the variable that determines when a breath cycles into expiration. Although I don't completely disagree with these approaches, I think the weaknesses here is that they really fail to capture what truly defines a mode, specifically the type of breath, as we just discussed, mandatory, spontaneous, or assisted, and the timing of breath delivery, which we'll discuss in just a few moments. The issue with defining a mode as either a volume-controlled mode or a pressure-controlled mode is that the nomenclature really isn't in keeping with how vent manufacturers or many intensivists and RTs think about modes, perhaps with the exception of PCV or pressure-controlled ventilation. Outside of perhaps PCV, the names and acronyms of most modes incorporate information regarding the type of breath and timing of delivery, for example, continuous mandatory ventilation or intermittent mandatory ventilation, both of which employ either volume or pressure as the targeted control. It's really up to you and the local practice patterns and expertise. And this is usually annotated as VC, volume control, or PC, pressure control, before the mode acronym. For example, VC-CMV or PC-SIMV. Regarding classifying modes on the basis of which variable cycles the ventilator into expiration, volume, or pressure, the issue with this approach is that modern pressure-controlled ventilators cycle into expiration on the basis of time and not when the set pressure is reached. Although historically, early pressure controllers such as the Bird Mark 7 did, in fact, end inspiration once the target pressure was reached. So getting back to the objective at hand, let's spend a bit of time examining both volume and pressure as the targeted control variable. And as is obvious from the respiratory equation of motion, there are only three of the five variables that a ventilator can control: pressure, volume, or flow. Because only one of these variables can be directly controlled at a given time, a ventilator must function as either a volume, pressure, or flow controller. Given that flow control ventilation is really uncommon and that control of volume actually implies control of flow, remember that flow is a function of volume over time, we'll focus our attention on volume and pressure ventilation. So by choosing either volume or pressure, we determine the control variable that will be used to establish gas flow into the patient's lungs. The key point here is that control variables are independent variables, meaning that if we decide to use volume, say as the control variable, the tidal volume selected will be constant and independent of both what is happening with the peak airway pressure, which will vary from breath to breath depending on the underlying resistance and compliance with the respiratory system at any given time, or when a patient's efforts change. Although the decision to choose volume or pressure as the control variable may vary based on whether we wish to provide a consistent minute ventilation versus limit pressure delivery, volume targeted ventilation is by far the most common targeted control variable due to its ease of use and graspable conceptual framework. With that said, in order to understand volume ventilation, all you have to do is recall what determines minute ventilation, and that is the tidal volume times the resp rate. And I think this is the main advantage of volume ventilation, namely that we can be assured that patients will receive a specific or guaranteed minute ventilation at a constant flow rate, usually, by dialing in a few preset variables. For example, by setting a resp rate of 10 and a tidal volume of 500 cc's, we know that our patients will receive a guaranteed minute ventilation of 5 liters, regardless of changes in the underlying airway resistance or lung compliance. Although we do want to monitor their peak pressures, as these can become high if there are changes or increases in resistance or a decrease in lung compliance. Therefore, volume ventilation is the ideal control variable when we wish to achieve or maintain a set CO2 level. And this begs the question, when or why would we ever be interested in maintaining a tight control of CO2? Well, in the trauma ICU, if we have a patient with a severe TBI and refractory ICPs or intracranial pressures, we may acutely and in the short term hyperventilate them to a PaCO2 of ideally no less than 35 in an effort to temporarily decrease ICP and improve CPP or cerebral perfusion pressure. Both in the ER and ICU, if patients present with a severe metabolic acidosis in the setting of, let's say, septic shock, irrespective of etiology, and they have a pre-intubation pH of 6.9 with a PCO2 of 25, and they're chugging along with a resp rate of 35 or 40 breaths per minute, once we intubate and paralyze that patient, we had better make sure that we continue to provide that patient with a minute ventilation at least equal to and ideally greater than their pre-intubation gas, or very quickly, you'll be running a code on your patient. And then finally, in the MICU or mixed med-surg ICU, where patients may be admitted with a primary acute respiratory acidosis or acute on chronic respiratory acidosis in the setting of a severe COPD exacerbation or asthma exacerbation, it's important in these patients to not just offload the muscles of respiration, but to use the vent to help correct any severe acid-base abnormalities due to an acute or acute on chronic respiratory acidosis. In addition to the tidal volume, resp rate, PEEP, and FiO2, other settings that need to be included or thought of in initiating a patient on volume ventilation are the flow rate and pattern. Regarding the main disadvantages of volume ventilation, the big one here is that when lung compliance worsens, as say in the setting of evolving ARDS, peak pressures, and more importantly, alveolar distending pressures may rise, resulting in alveolar overdistension, barrow, and volute trauma. And this is one of the major reasons that we monitor peak and plateau pressures in this specific patient population. Other disadvantages may relate to the inspiratory flow rate and pattern. Regarding flow rate, which is typically set somewhere on the order of 60 to 80 liters per minute, if this is set too high, this will result in high airway pressures because rapid flow generates more airway resistance. Conversely, if the inspiratory flow rate is set too low, patients will experience air hunger with evidence of respiratory muscle use on the ventilator display, and that's a discussion for another round, and clinical evidence of patient ventilator dyssynchrony due to patient demand exceeding the delivery of flow. Regarding flow pattern, it's important to remember that the most commonly used flow pattern seen during volume ventilation is a square waveform or constant inspiratory flow rate. However, this isn't in keeping with how we normally breathe, whereby inspiratory flow is highest at the start of inspiration and decelerates through the inspiratory effort until expiration begins. Therefore, switching to a descending ramp or decelerating flow wave pattern in lieu of the constant flow or box waveform pattern may actually help improve patient comfort. At this point, I do want to refer you to the show notes at traumaicurounds.ca or traumaicurounds.com. Please visit the website, leave us a comment, and do check out the notes for this particular episode. I think being able to visually see and understand what a ventilator graphic display looks like, as well as some of the differences between volume ventilation versus pressure ventilation, will help to solidify some of the concepts and discussion that we're having on rounds today. Moving along to pressure ventilation, with pressure-controlled ventilation, the desired inflation pressure is pre-selected and a decelerating inspiratory flow rate provides high flow rates at the onset of lung inflation to achieve the desired or set inflation pressure quickly. The I time or inspiratory time is also adjusted to allow for the flow rate to fall to zero at the end of inspiration. And as there's no airflow at end inspiration, the end inspiratory airway pressure is equal to the peak alveolar pressure. Put more simply, in pressure ventilation, we set a pressure or the peak alveolar pressure as the independent variable. Therefore, pressure remains constant, whereas volume will vary based on changes in the lung characteristics. Unlike volume ventilation, where we must monitor changes in peak airway pressures, here pressure is set and we must therefore monitor volume delivery. There are several advantages to pressure ventilation. These include preventing overdistension by setting a maximum pressure or controlling the peak alveolar pressure, which is the pressure most closely related to the potential for villi, or ventilator-induced lung injury, such as barotrauma or volutrauma. It may also be more comfortable for patients who are breathing spontaneously, as the negative pressure produced at the upper airway causes the ventilator to vary gas flow delivery to match the patient's need. Further, there's usually a longer duration of inspiration with pressure control ventilation, which may improve oxygenation. There are disadvantages, however, and this includes the variation in volume and hence minute ventilation delivery, and the fact that conceptually it's a little bit more difficult to understand. For example, in volume ventilation, the tidal volume is determined by the product of the eye time and the inspiratory flow rate. In pressure control ventilation, tidal volume is affected by several characteristics, including the delta or the difference between the set pressure and the PEEP, the flow pattern, the inspiratory time, as well as the contribution from time constants. As we've been trying to hammer into you, a mode describes a breath type and timing of breath delivery. And as you may have noticed or will notice, modes are oftentimes expressed as acronyms or shorthand terms found on the ventilator display, which are meant to convey how a ventilator performs in a particular situation. As I've emphasized previously, little consistency exists in the manner by which manufacturers name modes, and the terminology remains confusing. Further, there are several modes that are proprietary and ventilator-specific, for example, bi-level or volume ventilation plus and auto support. But sticking with the basics, there are really three breath delivery techniques, and they are: number one, continuous mandatory ventilation; number two, synchronized intermittent mandatory ventilation; and number three, spontaneous breathing modes. So let's discuss these different modes and review when and why we might choose one over another. One caveat here is that the choice of mode in any given unit is oftentimes more of a cultural, local, or provider preference phenomenon, rather than any superiority of one mode over another. With continuous mandatory ventilation, or CMV, as the name implies, all breaths are mandatory and can be volume or pressure targeted and are continuously provided by the ventilator. When would we use this mode? Well, in general, we don't, but you can imagine that in patients with severe ARDS and refractory hypoxemia, sometimes we'll administer neuromuscular blockade or paralytics in an effort to improve oxygenation. In VCMV, or volume continuous mandatory ventilation, if we set a rate of 12 and tidal volume of 500 cc's, then that patient will receive a breath every 5 seconds with a tidal volume of 500 cc's for a minute ventilation of 6 liters per minute. Now, breaths can be machine or patient triggered, and given that our patient is paralyzed, every breath will be time triggered by the machine based on the set resp rate, and this is what we mean by controlled ventilation. In the control mode, the patient makes no spontaneous effort. When breaths are patient-triggered, the CMV mode is oftentimes referred to as assist/control, or AC, and volume AC is probably the most commonly employed mode of ventilation worldwide. In assist control, or AC, patients are capable of initiating an assisted breath, which has the same tidal volume set by you, the clinician, but if this isn't possible, mandatory ventilator breaths are delivered at a pre-selected interval, again, machine or time-triggered. So just to summarize, the only difference between CMV and AC is that in AC, the patient may trigger the ventilator, whereas in CMV, the breaths are time-triggered. Also, every breath is a mandatory breath in CMV, whereas in AC, if the patient triggers a breath, these are assisted, but the same tidal volume as every other mandatory breath. Now, can you imagine any downsides to using AC as a mode of ventilation? If not, what if we have a patient who's tachypneic with a resp rate of 30 breaths per minute while on the ventilator? Well, even if the machine rate is set at 12 and the tidal volume at 500 cc's, the patient isn't going to have a set minute ventilation of 6 liters per minute. Rather, they'll receive a minute ventilation of 30 times 500 or 15 liters, which, as you can imagine, has the real potential to result in an acute respiratory alkalosis. Further, such a patient is also at risk for air trapping or autopeep if the inspiratory flow rate, IDE ratio, and tidal volume size aren't paid attention to, but that's a topic for another round. Given concerns with excessive minute ventilation in patients undergoing assist control or AC ventilation, intermittent mandatory ventilation, or IMV, was developed. As its name implies, an IMV, periodic volume or pressure-targeted breaths, occur at set intervals, just like in CMV. And again, these are time-triggered based on the set rate. But between mandatory breaths, patients can breathe spontaneously without receiving a mandatory breath at 500 cc tidal volume. In general, these quote-unquote spontaneous breaths are actually assisted breaths, as we usually offset some of the work of breathing due to the resistance in the ventilator circuit with the baseline pressure support, usually somewhere on the order of around 10 centimeters of water. One of the major issues with intermittent mandatory ventilation, or IMV, is the potential for a problem known as breath stacking, which may occur when a machine-triggered or mandatory breath is delivered at the exact same time that a patient initiates a spontaneous breath. When this happens, patients may receive an inordinately large breath, which has the potential to induce barotrauma. And this is usually circumvented by setting a peak pressure limit. Synchronized IMV, or SIMV, was developed to address the issue of breath stacking and is very similar to plain old boring IMV, with the exception that mandatory breaths are normally patient-triggered versus machine or time-triggered. With SIMV, we set a rate, and patients can breathe spontaneously through the circuit between mandatory breaths, and at a predetermined set interval, aka the set respiratory rate, the ventilator waits for the patient's next inspiratory effort, at which point the vent, and this is where the S, or synchronized, and SIMV comes in, the vent will synchronously develop a mandatory breath. After the breath is delivered, patients can once again breathe spontaneously without receiving another mandatory breath until the next one is scheduled to be delivered. So when would we employ SIMV? Well, in general, this choice of mode is used when we're looking to provide patients with partial ventilatory support. So earlier, we discussed the patient in the throes of shock with a pH of 6.9 who's critically unstable that we just placed on the vent. You know, in that particular setting, it probably makes no sense in the ER to place this patient on SIMV, as we're looking to provide this particular patient with full ventilatory support to decrease demand and improve overall systemic oxygenation. However, as patients improve and get better, there will come a time where we do want the patient to assume some part of the work of breathing by actively breathing in an effort to preserve some amount of respiratory muscle strength and work towards liberating our patients off of the ventilator. But it really is a fine balance because we want our patients to work, but we don't want them to work too much, which is why we oftentimes supplement spontaneous breaths with some level of pressure support. And by definition, then these would actually be assisted breaths. Now, as patients improve, one could envision decreasing the respiratory rate or the number of mandatory breaths that patients are receiving on SIMV and perhaps also coming down on the amount of pressure support for the assisted breaths to the point where patients are performing the work of breathing on their own and they are now ready for extubation or liberation from the ventilator. Regarding spontaneous modes of respiration, there are really three. One is spontaneous breathing, like we talked about the T-PEACE trial. Then there's CPAP and pressure support ventilation. For the purposes of the remainder of the talk, we're going to really focus in on pressure support ventilation because this is very commonly used in preparation for potential extubation. So in order for a patient to be considered for pressure support ventilation, this is a special form of assisted ventilation where the patient must have a consistent and reliable spontaneous respiratory pattern. So in a patient who's potentially apneic or having apneic periods, or who is really so narcotized to the point where they're bradypneic, this is not the sort of patient that we would consider for pressure support ventilation. And in this mode, we have to set the inspiratory pressure, PEEP, as well as a sensitivity level or the trigger. Now, the patient establishes their own rate, their inspiratory flow, and the inspiratory time. And the tidal volume is really determined by the pressure gradient or that's the delta P between the set pressure minus the end expiratory pressure, or PEEP, as well as the lung characteristics, compliance, and resistance, as well as patient effort. And the key point here is pressure support ventilation is always an assist mode, meaning that it's patient triggered, although it's pressure limited and flow cycled. In terms of how pressure support ventilation breath cycles into expiration, essentially, this is based on flow. So as a patient inspires and they're getting some amount of pressure support from the ventilator, once the peak inspiratory flow rate drops to about 25% of its maximal value, the ventilator senses this, and then they cycle into expiration. And in a future episode, we'll go over some of the different modes or comparison of different modes, such as spontaneous breathing trials with pressure support versus SIMV, quote-unquote, weaning versus TPS trials. There have been several studies that have actually compared these different modes to assess superiority of one mode versus another in terms of determining when a patient's ready to be liberated from the ventilator. And I think we would be a little remiss if we didn't at least touch upon PRVC, which stands for Pressure Regulated Volume Control, which in the past several years really seems to have become the number one mode of ventilation being used across ICUs, even more so than volume AC. And so what is PRVC? Well, essentially, this is sort of like a smart form of ventilation. It employs a closed-loop method of ventilating patients and provides pressure ventilation with a volume target. Essentially, the ventilator monitors the progress of tidal volume delivery and adjusts its pressure response based on one of two methods, either based on a single breath, and this is what's known as pressure augmentation, which we don't do a lot of, or over a period of several breaths, i.e. breath by breath, such as PRVC, which is also known as a dual control mode. So essentially for PRVC, this delivers patient or machine/time-triggered pressure-targeted time-cycled breaths. Essentially, during breath delivery, the ventilator measures the tidal volume delivered and compares it to the set tidal volume that we've dialed in. And if the volume delivered is less than the set tidal volume, the ventilator increases the pressure delivery progressively over several breaths until the set and targeted tidal volumes are about equal. So this is a great way of generating a guaranteed minute ventilation, but doing so with pressures that are as low as possible in an effort to decrease high peak airway pressures and the potential for baro or volute trauma. So in summary, we've discussed the modes of mechanical ventilation, or at least some of the more common modes of ventilation and how we define them. And again, a mode is defined by the three T's: the type of breath, mandatory, spontaneous, or assisted; the targeted control, volume, or pressure; and the timing of breath delivery, continuous, intermittent, or spontaneous, based on the patient's own respiratory rate and effort. If you like what you're hearing and you feel that this is applicable to your clinical care of patients at the bedside, please let us know. Give us a positive review, leave some comments at iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts from, whether that be Spotify, Google, or Stitcher. Until next time, please stay safe, take care of one another, keep reading, and we'll talk soon.